Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. The Emerson News Network. This is Legion of News!
From high atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, again, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings. Again, including, but not limited to, the following.
Crews spend the weekend looking for Kyron Horman. Beaverton's Reeser's plant is evacuated due to an ammonia leak. And Geraldine Ferraro dies at age 75.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. This is Legion of News.
And
wait, there we go. Well, excellent. Fantastic.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor. And this is unbelievably still Monday, March 28th, 2011. And here's everything you need to know. Volunteer search and rescue teams returned to the hills northwest of Portland as part of an ongoing search for Kyron Horman. On Saturday, 75 volunteers, along with two search dogs, covered dense wooded area along Skyline Boulevard near Moreland Road. Crews searched the same spot in late January, focusing on 11 key areas. Despite wet conditions, search teams were back out again on Sunday morning.
I don't mean to be Johnny Buzzkill about this, but is it... How do I put this? I'm not saying everybody doesn't, root for him to become one of those stories where they find the kid like 40 years later or whatever, or however it turns out. But is it news that they're actually just looking?
No.
It's like saying it's news that we're attempting to cure cancer. I'm not saying we're not. It just seems like it's not really an update. As it's not news as such. As somebody else, as somebody once said, that's olds.
Yeah, he went missing on June 4th of 2010, and teams have scoured the areas between his home and school. They've made trips to Sovie Island to drag the waters and such. And now they're once again out up on Skyline looking for stuff. But again, they won't say what it is they're looking for. So they're looking.
Looking for stuff in all the wrong places.
That's right. The Reeser's Fine Foods plant was evacuated in Beaverton early this morning due to an ammonia leak. The leak was detected just before 5 a.m. Around 35 workers were inside the building at the time and were evacuated as a safety precaution. No injuries or illnesses were reported. Investigators said the leak was safely sealed by 6 a.m.
Now, here's something we were talking about this morning as we were filling in for Bob Miller on KPAM this morning. An exercise in broadcasting that went flawlessly, by the way, and without error or awkwardness of any kind.
I think for you and I, it was quite, it was smooth as silk. I think for
grading
the others,
on that bar.
For the others around us, it was a little confusing when we kept talking about, you know, Star Wars
and pooping.
And poop.
Yeah. Yeah, but I care less about them. But here's how tiny my brain is. Is that this morning, I mean, this has already been asked and answered, as they say in Alec Appeal. I asked, what do they need all the ammonia for? They're making Mexican foods. And then somebody, I think, called in or emailed or something and said, well, they need the ammonia for it. And I've already forgotten.
It was part of the refrigeration system, this person said.
There we go.
Although I still believe that, you know, it's an ingredient
in their
coleslaw. Because if you've ever had that coleslaw, it's nasty.
Hint of urine. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, March 28th, 2011. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can get it via iTunes as well as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And it's also available on your mobile device. It is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. If you'd like to take the goodness of Rick and Dawn with you, wherever ye might travel on this globe of ours as you stomp the terra. Don't forget, coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, also science on the march. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll talk to Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, also Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek, plus a clown watch. That is all coming up. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A gutsy pioneer, a trailblazer, tough as nails.
Thank you, Dawn.
No, that's how Geraldine Ferraro is being remembered.
Oh.
Not you. But I'll make a note that when you die, to call you a gutsy pioneer, a trailblazer, and tough as nails.
Thanks so much.
The former vice presidential candidate died Saturday of cancer at the age of 75. New York Congressman Charles Rangel said Ferraro never complained about the cancer she'd been battling over the past decade.
No.
I love Charlie Rangel.
It's like he's just speaking to us through a filter made of shredded larynx. Okay, hold on a second. I just got to turn the teletype on. All right.
Even though you think these things can happen, you never really prepared for the shocking news that she has permanently left us. But what a fighter and what a great American she has been.
I can say Charlie Rangel better be prepared for something to go wrong with his body, because it seems like if that guy's the picture of health, there's just no justice. If that guy, I'm not wishing any illness on him, of course. But
Geraldine and I would go jogging together.
Seriously, how, and I just ask this from a medical perspective, how is he still walking around? It just seems like his body is falling apart underneath him when you just listen to him talk. He's like some worst case scenario for Jack Klugman or Harvey Fierstein.
I think he's just held together at this point with duct tape and clothespins.
Just sheer political will.
Well, speaking of guys with excellent voices, Elliot Spitzer, the former governor of New York, says Ferraro always understood what really matters.
Don't let the whores put you in their black book.
She was tough as nails, up to any fight, but always had her eye on what mattered. Authenticity was the hallmark of Geraldine Ferraro. She had ups, downs. The media would be nice to her one day, kick her the next. And she said, ignore all that.
Ferraro was Walter Mondale's running mate in 1984. Charlie Rangel served with Ferraro in the New York delegation.
She was a big boost to the ticket, and she's a heck of a person, and she's had a lot of setbacks in that campaign, but she always came out smiling.
God damn it. Just even listening to him, it's just like scraping away the inside of my cilia. All right, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. All right, now, I've already... Wow. I mean, I haven't even... I just signed into my email, like 9 minutes ago, and I'm already... people are just... It's strange the things that people turn to us or to me or to this show for. There's bits of information that they think either we really, really, really need to know, or every now and again, some news story will happen, or it'll float around, it'll be just something in the ether, something in the air, and I will suddenly start to get emails about it. Because I think people labor under the illusion that I can somehow, that I'm a power broker on planet Earth. That I can, you know, that I can do like a Superman 2 and just turn the globe back and fix something. So I have gotten 5 different emails within the last, I don't know, 25 minutes or so. People asking me if Captain Crunch cereal is being discontinued.
But
and so if 5
you
people...
You do have your finger on the pulse of cereal news.
It's true. We were just talking about cereal this morning on the Bob Miller Show. So I've done a quick investigation, and it appears that is not true.
Huh.
It appears that a rumor has been whipping around the Intertron saying that Captain Crunch is going to be... That either the cereal or possibly just the mascot was going to be retired. But apparently neither is true.
My goodness. I mean...
It's...
I,
a,
there's so much money being made there by Captain Crunch and his crew of serial pirates.
Here's the thing, though. It's all worth it for this headline. This is from Google News. Over the past 48 years, the headline says, Captain Crunch has destroyed the lives of millions and millions of children. I'm going to go buy some today. See if I can drive up the score a little bit. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Efforts to avoid a nuclear disaster in Japan suffered a big setback after workers at the Unit 2 reactor in the Fukushima nuclear complex rushed out after a reading showed radiation levels had reached 10 million times higher than normal. But plant operators said later on Sunday that the reading was a mistake, and the number was so high that the worker who took the measurement had to rush out before confirming the reading. The number is not credible, said Tokyo Electric Power Company spokesman Takashi Kurita.
What's the real
number,
Don?
Very sorry.
What's the actual number?
1,000 millisieverts per hour.
It is 100,000 times the normal level,
okay.
I believe, is the answer. It was either 10,000 or 100,000. Either of which seems bad, by the way.
But it wasn't a million, though, so...
It's a skillion times higher than normal.
Well, the national safety standard is 250 millisieverts over a year. And they're measuring 1,000 millisieverts per hour.
Like anybody knows what the hell that means. Tell me you're measuring it in Scoville units.
I know, but if you're comparing 250 of anything over a year to 1,000 of that same thing per hour, that's a lot of whatever that thing is.
according to
Reuters, that is the highest reading so far in a crisis triggered by a massive earthquake and tsunami on March 11th. If accurate, those airborne readings mean that it would be difficult for emergency workers to continue to try to prevent the disaster from spreading. In fact, Japanese authorities are warning people who live within 20 kilometers of the Fukushima Daiichi power plant not to return to their homes. Speaking through an interpreter, Yukio Adano, chief cabinet secretary, says some people have been returning before the monitoring was completed.
By the way, there ought to be some sort of a news organization that just does updates on sewage called Roto-Rooter. Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooters. Whatever.
Yeah, there we go.
That joke doesn't work for either of us.
No.
All right. Well, we both took a good run at it, though. We both tried to make that joke work. That's a thing my mouth is just not going to be able to say.
Writer's Rooter.
Yeah, see, it doesn't know. No. Well, everybody knows. That's one of those jokes that works.
Get the gist of it, really.
If I write that down and put it on an NPR blog later, somebody will chuckle at it. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Well, we were going to hear from the interpreter speaking for Yukio Adano about people in Japan.
All right, hold on. Just 1 second, won't you, Don? All right, let's see. This is soundbite.
By state and try to discuss to see whether it is possible to allow the residents to return while maintaining safety. So please wait for the result of the assessment.
I am Starsha of Iskandar.
Adano is urging those people not to return because of high radiation levels.
Okay.
Stay away because it is a very risky area with contamination. Therefore, we urge residents not to return to the 20-kilometer radius area.
This is like the message that the Nostromo doesn't translate until it's far too late.
Yes.
Yes, it's exactly like that. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Did you get a chance? Oh, I asked you about this. You didn't get a chance to watch it. The tsunami footage?
Oh, no. I should
watch that maybe between the two shows because it's about 5 minutes in length, and you want to watch all 5 minutes. I mean, it's astounding. It is, and I can't take credit for finding it. Listener George found it, sent it to me. I put it up on Facebook. I think it's the second or third entry down at the facebook.com/RickEmerson. It's also in the gallery, although it takes a while to load there because it's a QuickTime video. But it's 5.5 minutes, and it's two guys standing on top of a building with a handy cam, you know, or a camcorder or whatever, just pointing down. And Seamus described it the best. He said that when you hear about tsunamis or you see them in popular culture, it's always a huge, huge towering wave that comes and crashes down on you from above. And he said when you watch this, you realize that what actually happens a lot of the time is that it's not a huge crashing wave from above. It is just, he described it as being, and you'll understand what I mean when you watch this, he described it as being like, you know, when your toilet clogs and you flush it and it just keeps rising. And it just keeps rising. And it just keeps rising. Except it just keeps rising with such force and volume that the first thing you see when the video starts is, I don't know, probably 25 or 30 full-size cars just being swept along down the river, and they look like, I mean, they look like eggs. I mean, they look tiny. I mean, it's just such a huge, and then it just, and as you watch for 5.5 minutes, and there's these guys on top of a building, clearly because they can't get out. And somebody said, well, why are they still filming? And it's because, like, they're surrounded by a torrent of water that is rising by what looks to be about 10 feet every 30 seconds. And as you watch the video, you just see one building after another around them just destroyed and crumble into the river and then sail away. It's astounding. So you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. Watch that when you get a chance. It really is. Seamus described it as being a sort of a liquid langolier that is nibbling away at you from underneath. It really is terrifying to watch. It is. It's amazing.
Well, a Vernonia man who is suspected of driving drunk exited his vehicle during a traffic stop on Friday night, and his car, once he exited his vehicle, rolled backwards and crashed into a patrol car.
Wah, wah.
Just after 11 p.m. Friday, a Washington County Sheriff's deputy attempted to pull over a pickup truck for speeding and suspicion of DUII. The truck was traveling northbound on Highway 47 toward Vernonia. The deputy was using emergency lights and his siren, but the driver continued for 4 miles before pulling over. It was reported that the person was driving in a manner consistent with someone under the influence of drugs or alcohol. The driver, identified as 50-year-old David Brewer, stopped at the entrance to Stubbs Stewart State Park, opened the door and exited the pickup. The truck then began to roll backwards towards the deputy's patrol car. The driver was unable to apply the brakes to stop the pickup before it collided into the front of the patrol car, causing about $2,000 in damages. Brewer was arrested and charged with DUII, reckless driving, attempt to elude, and criminal mischief.
I bet he got a huge, huge beating out of that, because you know that the paperwork the cop has to do on that?
Yeah.
I mean, the paperwork for just arresting some just dick, you know, for DUI has got to be substantial. And I mean, if the guy wrecks your car, too, you're going to be there all night filling things out. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, the beatings would just begin immediately when something like that happens.
It happened to me once when I was, I don't know, about 19 or so. I was parked on a hill for... It wasn't like on a, like an abandoned hill, but I was parked actually at a car lot. And the car lot was at the top of the hill. And what I did not know but later found out was that my my transmission had started to go. And so I didn't have the safety brake on. I didn't have the parking brake on. And it just slipped out of park. It was no longer – the transmission wasn't able to hold. And so the car just slipped into reverse. And I'm talking to the guy. And I forget why I was there. I think he was like a client or something. But anyway, I was talking to the guy. And so I'm like, so anyway, blah, 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 blah. And he says, hey – your car's moving. And I just turn around, and it's like just this whole miniature horror movie of the car just going and just rolling away from me in slow motion down a hill. And I mean, and at the top of a hill that leads directly down to like a thoroughfare. And fortunately, I mean, it was like 100 yards away, and it hit another car, which all things considered was still the best possible outcome, because at least that stopped it. Because it would have just sailed down the hill, picking up momentum all the way, like, right into huge traffic at, like, rush hour. I mean, it was bad, bad, bad. That's a uniquely unnerving thing. You look at your car rolling away from you. You don't want that.
No.
Just in case you were curious.
Okay, don't do that.
Here's Don Taylor.
A man accused of attacking his in-laws with a samurai sword while chasing them through a California neighborhood may face attempted murder charges, according to police. Police say they will ask prosecutors to charge 20-year-old Zen Timothy Singleton.
Zen
Timothy Singleton.
Okay.
With attempted murder in the bloody attack that wounded two of Singleton's relatives. Authorities were called to the home in Hemet, California, on Tuesday after neighbors reported that a man with a samurai sword was chasing his relatives through the neighborhood. Singleton's 24-year-old brother-in-law received a gash on the forehead from a piece of glass that was shattered by the sword, and his father-in-law, 50, was slashed through the thigh. Singleton was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, assault with a deadly weapon, burglary, and vandalism. Police did not say what caused the altercation.
It seems like there should be some Zen pun that I can make there, and I just, I'm not able to do it. I can't really come up with anything.
Well, for one thing, there is sort of an irony to that. You're not very Zen, I would imagine, if you are chasing your relatives around and slashing at them.
Well, unless you assume that that's just the way it's got to be, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just sort of go with it. Yeah, the closest I could get was sort of a be fear now kind of a thing, and that doesn't really work.
No.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
New York City is challenging the latest census figures. Mayor Michael Bloomberg says for whatever reason, it understated the number of residents in Brooklyn and Queens.
We're in the process of reporting to the Census Bureau our analysis of the implausibility of the high numbers of vacant housing units the Bureau reported in some of the most vital neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Queens.
Yes, it's entirely implausible that at this point in the American economy there are vacancies anywhere, more so than you might expect.
He says there are more New Yorkers and fewer vacant apartments than indicated by the latest census. And he says they'll formally challenge the latest data on the city.
Everything we know about these neighborhoods tells a very different story. They are vibrant, vital communities. And the people who've tried to find apartments in these neighborhoods can confirm that there just isn't an abundance of vacancies.
What is it if you challenge the census, though? I mean, how do you solve that? You just have to find some clipboard guy and make him send him back to Queens for another year and just come back and we'll see if they keep counting until you get the same number twice in a row, Ted.
Yeah, I don't know how they solve this. And the problem, it's one of those things that whether it's people just didn't want to admit that they live somewhere,
right,
or there really are a lot more vacant buildings than they would like. The thing is that, you know, you get federal funding for a lot of things based on the size of your population. So I believe Mr. Bloomberg is concerned about the amount of income that his city will be receiving from the federal government.
It is entirely possible that maybe folks aren't too wild about somebody from the government knocking on their door with a clipboard saying, I just want to ask you some questions, sir.
Yeah.
Seems like maybe that's a thing you're not going to answer.
Yeah. No matter how many times you, and I actually had one of those part-time jobs with the census a long time ago, and I got like the worst job because I was, you know, sort of the new girl and I was the temp.
Yeah.
So I got just the crap job, which was I had to sit and call motels.
Wow.
And almost all of which were owned by Korean families. And I had to try and get them to tell me how many permanent residents they had living there. Like people that were living there, you know, week in and week out.
And that's like a strange linguistic banner, barrier, too.
So I had to kind of get that whole concept across to them. And I had to let them know that the government really didn't care who they were or if they were legal.
Right.
I just needed a number.
Well, yeah, because you call, you know, and so you're La Migra calling for a...
So honestly, there was a point at which I was like 19, and I had this job for like a month or two. And after making about 20 of these phone calls and talking to all these people, I just started making stuff up.
Excellent. Good for you. Well done.
I just had to fill out the forms. So that'll tell you a little bit about your census.
That's it. I won't say who this is, but I had a friend of mine who worked at... I actually had a friend of mine who worked at the Nielsen company who did the same thing. She got so tired of trying to track people down who wanted to take part in the rating system. Eventually, she just started making up returns. It's like she would get like, you know, little booklets back or whatever, you know, or they would not get the booklets back. The diaries, they'd be blank. And she would just go through and just make stuff up. I had somebody else who processed insurance forms for a living and confessed that after a while, they got to be so high, they just went into the shredder. But, you know, and so was some guy who was like, I'm trying to get the insurance to pay for a kidney. Cut to the office. Right into the shredder. Well, we never got any form. Sorry, you'll have to resubmit that.
Nice. A man is under arrest in Costa Mesa, California, after allegedly attacking another man with a machete in the parking lot of a shopping mall. This happened around 9 p.m. last night in the parking lot near Sears at South Coast Plaza. Police received a 911 call from the victim, who told them she had been assaulted and offered a suspect description. He also told police this suspect had run away towards Maggiano's Little Italy restaurant. About 10 minutes later, officers stopped a man matching the suspect description near the Regency South Coast Village theaters, and they recovered a 25-inch machete from beneath a row of seats in the theater after the suspect told them where he had left it.
People never plan this out. You never find the dumpster beforehand. How hard can it possibly be?
19-year-old Robert Hopkins Jr. of Costa Mesa was arrested for assault with a deadly weapon.
Okay.
They're still looking for the alleged victim who made the 911 call, though.
Well, because were the victim or an observer,
witness? Apparently it was a man called 911 and said he had been assaulted.
Oh, yeah. Been macheted.
And then said there's a guy with a machete.
But then he just vanished?
He just went, okay, I did my part.
You figured at a certain point you got to get that looked at. That's not like a little mercurochrome is going to take care of that, I wouldn't think. Seems like that's a substantial injury, unless the guy was asking for it.
Maybe he said he'd been assaulted, but what he just meant was that he'd been menaced.
Maybe. The guy had threatened to assault him with a machete. It seems a machete immediately crosses the line to do grievous bodily harm, I would think.
As soon as they swing it at you.
Yeah, that's you don't want that.
No.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do some science.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Here's a perfect example of what we're talking about today. So Don and I both have the iPhone, and so we came in, and Don had forgotten your power cord or your cable or whatever, and he said, "Hey, do you have that charging cable for your iPhone?" And I said, "Do I ever? Hold on a second." And I reached down to the floor because I'm real anal about this. I have one at home, one in my car, one in my bag, and then one I have four of them. So no matter where I go, I am always armed with a charging cable for my iPhone. So I got one down here, except at some point, and I'm not blaming anybody in particular. Not really. When I left for New York, it was fine. Now, when I came back, it had been stepped on. And so part of the plastic covering at the very end, the part right near where it plugs into the phone, has been broken. And so there's just sort of this, it's just some exposed metal. And then it's got that sort of like aluminum foil kind of wrapping around it. And as I passed it to you, I said, this probably won't electrocute you. But then again, I don't know. There must be a reason they covered that with a non-conductive material. So, you know, yeah. I mean, you seem to be using it without incident.
Yeah, I just have it here under a bunch of paper. So what could go wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I almost want to have you plug it into the wall and just, you know, give it a good lick and just see what happens. You know, I don't know. You know who would know that, though, is Joe Squires, because he's a man who knows things.
He'd probably just come in and look at it and shake his head sadly and go, don't touch that.
Yeah, just...
and then leave.
Just ask if we prepaid the rent. You guys all taken care of in here? Everything, security deposit, everything, damage? All right, great. You can find out more about Squires Electric by going to squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Whether you're upgrading your home, whether you're repairing, whether you're installing, or whether you're turning your business into a home business, you're going to be moving from one building to two to four to six to whatever. If you're going to be buying or renting, you want to make sure that everything is as it is supposed to be. Squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
The head of mechanical and industrial engineering at Qatar University, that is an Arab country, Qatar, announced plans this week to develop an artificial cloud that will be positioned in the sky to provide shade and help reduce the heat in stadiums for the 2022 World Cup.
Simpsons did it!
The plan made news around the world, with many wondering how Qatar University could come up with such an idea. It didn't. They got the idea from The Simpsons.
Oh, does it actually say that? I was just effing with you.
No, yeah. In the two-part 1995 episode, Who Shot Mr. Burns, nefarious power plant owner C. Montgomery Burns devises a plan to create a giant shield that will block the sun and keep Springfield in perpetual darkness. Springfield's residents soon turn on Mr. Burns, and the mystery of his shooting ensues. So, as the news organization Globosport points out, while Qatar may have added their own twist by making the artificial cloud remote-controlled, the core idea actually comes from The Simpsons.
Okay, I'm impressed that that they actually assessed that. You know who wrote that? Mr. Bill Oakley, who has a studio not too far from us, who's the executive producer of The Simpsons, lurks around. Have we had him on the show?
No.
We got to do that one of these days.
They should get him. They should get him some free tickets to the World Cup or something.
He should be an honorary monarch in Qatar.
And this idea also popped up in 2002 when South Park did an entire episode called "The Simpsons Already Did It," where Butters, as Professor Chaos,
right,
builds a large structure to block out the sun. Traditional wisdom states that our younger years are the best of our lives, with a milestone of 40, meaning we're over the hill and already on the wane. But in fact, satisfaction and optimism steadily increase after middle age, easily eclipsing the early years and peaking as late as the 80s, according to research.
I think it's the capacity for self-delusion increases as one ages.
Really?
Yeah, I think you really just, I think your skills for rationalization grow exponentially as you get older.
Well, then why does old people seem so cranky?
Well, because they can be. I mean, that's the thing about that. I mean, it's like they're not, that's just because it's fun. I mean, I don't even know that old people are pissed off about half the things that they complain about. I think they just like it. It's just...
You've just been holding it in your whole life, and now you can actually say it.
Seriously.
So you're just going to be mad about anything. I hate tuna in cans! Yes. You could just be angry about anything.
Yeah, people, you know, some guy shows up to do the edging around the lawn, and you just, you know, you could just scream at him, and, you know, why not? I mean, you know, somebody goes by, throw a brick at them, you know? I'm an old guy. What are they going to do to me? Nothing. It's like, it is a buy for every sort of socially reprehensible behavior you've ever wanted to engage in. Yeah.
Yeah, and yet these scientists say that we're actually happier in our 80s. So maybe that's it.
That's what I'm saying, because you're not like, bottling the stress up anymore. You're letting it all out.
You're like Ren Hook. You're just so happy to be angry.
Well, and plus when you're like, you know, when you're like 25, 30, 35, you're trying to make your way in the world. You're trying to climb a corporate ladder. So just think about all the crap you've had to swallow you know, just, you know, at your job or from some dick boss of yours, you know, where it's, hey, you're going to work harder for less money. Is that okay? Yeah, that's great. That's wonderful. Just shoving everything, just hating your life. You get 80 years old, a guy tells you that, you say, hey, you can suck this, is what you can do, friend. Think about the freeing sensation that must be to just tell a guy to just, to, you know, where to get off. That's what I'm saying.
That does sound nice.
Something to be said for it.
Facebook may be getting closer to taking over America. According to Edison Research, more than half of all Americans aged 12 and up are now on Facebook. The study showed that 51% of these Americans are on the site. The researchers who've been tracking Facebook's growth over the past 3 years say usage has gone from 8% in 2008 to the new figure today. The complete results of the study will be presented on April 5th through a webinar.
I hate that. I hate things.
Is that a seminar on the internet?
I did a webinar. That's like people who wanted me to talk about vlogs. Not going to happen.
Edison Research's findings are based on a relatively small sample size, however. The survey included 2,020 people under age 12 or over. In addition, the age range is kind of peculiar in Facebook's terms of service because Facebook's terms of service require users to be at least 13. So
it's also interesting. Facebook claims to be in 208 countries. The State Department says there are only 197 countries.
Well,
so apparently they're in...
Mark Zuckerberg knows a few things that we don't know.
There are 11 countries that we have not yet discovered here on Earth.
They're like crazy guy countries, where it's like a guy just decides that his house is a country.
The Kingdom of Todd.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that guy's on Facebook. So there's one. No. That's all the science.
Okay, there you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
In size and scope, it's a class action lawsuit worthy of its defendant, Walmart. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court will decide if millions of women can sue their employer, Walmart, for billions of dollars in damages. If they say yes, it will be the largest employment discrimination class action lawsuit in U.S. history. The case was originally brought by six female employees in 2001 who claimed pay disparities, a less than friendly work environment, and a dearth of opportunities for career advancement, not to mention orders from male managers to, quote, doll up. Walmart denies the claims.
You want to talk about a Sisyphean task. Hey, Walmart employee, go sexify yourself.
You make yourself look a little prettier? No, I work at Walmart.
Seriously, put yourself in a Glad bag.
The Walmart denies the claims. The Supreme Court won't decide if Walmart is indeed guilty of sex discrimination. Instead, it will rule on whether the six women who brought the case can stand for the millions of women who have worked for the company since 1998.
Is Walmart too sexy?
Walmart's lawyers have sought to portray the lawsuit as ludicrous, given its size and scope. Lawyers for the plaintiffs say size alone should have no bearing on the case's legitimacy. By throwing out the case, one lawyer said it would be sending a damaging message that as long as you discriminate against enough people, courts can't get involved.
Or, you know, maybe working at Walmart isn't all it's cracked up to be. Maybe it's not the glorious dream profession that you were led to believe.
I had this, I worked for a newspaper. I'm not going to say which one, but it's here in the Portland area, and I worked there. And I had a new publisher who came in who was a woman, and she was from the South. And, oh, she played up her Southern accent.
Of course.
Like crazy. And it was just kind of annoying. But she would say to me all the time, and I used to work with Mike Ressel, our friend Mike Ressel, who writes for the Oregonian. I used to talk to him about, I told him one day, I said, it really drives me crazy. She always makes all of these jabs about my appearance. He's just like, well, like what? I was like, well, she keeps telling me how much prettier I look when I'm wearing makeup. And how nice I look, you know, when my hair is done. And so I said, she wouldn't come out and tell me to doll up. But she would say stuff like that. And Mike said, well, I'm sure she doesn't mean anything. And then he was standing there one day when it happened. And honest to God, if a male manager said something like that to a female employee, it would totally be sexual discrimination. But she was like, ah, Don, how nice to see you. You look so lovely today. I do like it when you wear a little lipstick.
You look so much less wretched, darling.
Yeah, it was like, thank you. Because, you know, as a reporter for a community newspaper, it's important that I look pretty.
It's not that, like, sexual harassment doesn't exist. It's just that it exists. Sexual harassment obviously does exist, but sexual harassment as we traditionally understand it, which is a boss chasing a secretary around the desk or saying, hey, if you want that promotion, you know what you need to do. It's just like that exists in the midst of just this morass, just this jungle of like 5 billion other behaviors, which depending on the moment and who's doing it and how it's being done are either horrible or, you know, not. Or great, or somewhere in between. When I worked at a radio station, I worked for Citadel Communications when I worked for Citadel in Salt Lake, there's a woman who got a boob job done. She got a breast augmentation. And I swear to God, there was like a 2 or 3 day, because she was gone for like a week or so, and she'd like recuperating or whatever. And there was like a few days after she came back where she would just, and it was like a cube farm, you know, and so there's like no real privacy, there's no offices. And there was 2 or 3 days after she got back where she would just stand like out in the middle of the cube farm while the other female employees were invited to come by and give her breasts a good squeeze. And just, you know, just to see how real they felt. Oh, they're so natural, Janice. I can't believe it. They feel just like the real thing. Hey, Tiffany, come here. Tammy, Brandy, come check this out. And so you'd be sitting there trying to work, and then there's like some chick getting her melon squeezed by like 3 other girls. And she's going like, okay, I guess I'll just look at the screen and cry. You know, it was so weird. And so I guess that's sexual harassment, maybe.
Well, it is.
But who's being harassed there? And I don't even really know.
Well, that's the thing, is that you could complain about it being an uncomfortable work environment.
Are any of the women being harassed
in that
scenario?
That's the thing, no.
Well, it's maybe just, not. If a woman says, come over here.
It's inappropriate.
If a woman says, hey, Dawn, come over here and give these boobs a squeeze. You could argue that you are being harassed.
Yeah.
But they didn't really seem to mind. But then again, that's what everybody says. She seemed to like it.
This is one of the reasons why, though, I'm so happy to not ever work in an environment, particularly with other women. And again, ladies, I love you. I do. Nothing else. But honestly, every time I have ever been in kind of a work environment where there's a lot of women, it's like I just, the amount of conversation about diets and pregnancy and boobs and cramps, and it's like, just shut the hell up about it. Just stop. I had to actually go to a manager once at a newspaper I worked and say, could you please just tell all the women in classified to stop talking about their diet constantly? It's like they all went on Weight Watchers, and all day long it was discussion about how much weight somebody had lost and how many points something was and whether or not they could eat an apple. And it was like...
That's because they looked ever so fetching that way, Don.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program kicks you in the ear holes with, among other things, a snuff watch, also clown watch. Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian, music editor Ryan White, is going to be here as well, plus Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. That is all coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Plus, something else, something that seemed really interesting and important at the time. Wait.
The listener...
Wait.
No.
What?
The thing? I don't know.
What were you just talking about?
I don't know. The tsunami thing? We're going to talk about that.
You talk pretty one day. I don't know. I had something else that seemed fascinating. But we'll get to all that. So that is all coming up next hour at the Rick Emerson radio program. That is RickEmersonShow.com. That is...
We will talk, of course, about our experiences being on KPAM this morning and surrounded by, like... An engineer and a sound guy and a news guy and a sports guy and somebody doing traffic down the hall and $70 billion worth of equipment around us, and it was kind of insane.
It was like they'd brought a huge support team in. You know, it was like they'd brought half of a film crew or something in, like just to sort of surround us and to do, like, you know.
It was like a NASA control center, and we were the chimps that were just going to be put in the capsule and shot up into space.
We're the burn on reentry dogs for KPAM. But it was like looking around and just being like in the control center of NASA or like. You know, like when you see those shots on CNN where they go live from the CNN News Center in Atlanta, and it's like in the back, you see whoever, you know, you see, John King or somebody on CNN, and then in the background there's like 70,000 people at computer monitors, and you can't quite figure out what they're doing, but there's a lot of people there required to make the thing work. That's totally how KPAM is. I mean, you know, yeah. God love him. It was just weird. It's because we're a bit of a Spartan operation here.
We are.
We have a skeleton crew with which we run this, but it was all very strange. Yeah, so we'll talk about our KPAM experience later on in the Rick Emerson Emerson Show. Also, this thing about a guy's penis.
Oh, okay. So, always good. The winning $319 million ticket from Friday night's Mega Millions lottery was reportedly bought by 7 state employees in New York. Emmanuel Biondi is the Public Employees Federation Council leader at the state housing agency. And he says all the men who bought the ticket together work in the IT department.
They're good, average, middle-class folks, just hardworking people. They're public employees. They don't make a great deal of money, but they make a living, you know, and they take care of their families. And I'm just pleased as punch that they all won.
Pleased as punch. Is that one of those things where it's like the office gets a, there's like an office lottery ticket that is purchased or whatever? I wonder if that's ever resulted. I wonder if that, how many lawsuits come out of that where it's like, you know, well, Bob wasn't even at work that day. You know, well, I asked Larry to chip in for me. I don't remember it that way. It's just, you know, and there's a whole lot of ruckus that just gets pitched about it.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things like everybody puts in like $5 or something and then they buy like 20 tickets
right.
or something. Yeah. So anyway, this fellow, Mr. Biondi, says he knows the store where the winning ticket was bought.
It's right next door, the little store that we buy soda and coffee at on our breaks. And so everyone buys a ticket or two.
That's one of those things where you hope that they end up being like, you know, like good guys and not just some jackhole in a trailer park that's got 70 kids and a meth habit. You know, or that they end, or that they don't end up that way. Because, like, that's what seems to happen with, like, half the lottery winners. It's like, they go, that's not going to change me. And then, like, a year later, they're you know, in a flop house, like, just strung out on China White.
It would totally change me. I admit that right up. It would change. I would probably be just a huge bastard if I suddenly won, like, $300 million.
In that sense, it would not change me at all. I would just have the money to act upon all of the things that I threaten now. Things right now that I just issue as sort of warnings, they would come to pass. Like when I say, one of these days, you're going to get it, you'd have it.
I'd be like Tracy Jordan on 30 Rock or something. You'd be like, sure, I have a miniature giraffe in my jacuzzi. Because I can.
Oh, I watched the 30 Rock over the weekend with Aaron Sorkin, which is pretty great, actually. That was good for him. I was impressed that he did that. I guess winning an Academy Award actually makes you able to laugh at your own failures a little bit more. There's Don Taylor.
An explosion and massive fire in the 700 block of Waddington in Bloomfield, Michigan, destroyed a vintage Lamborghini on Friday. Firefighters were called to the home on a report of a car on fire in the garage. A new owner had just closed on the home, but the former owners had yet to move out.
Oh.
Both the garage and the first level have been destroyed. Officials say the home's 51-year-old former owner was trying to start the car when an explosion rocked the garage. The flames quickly spread to the home. It's not yet known what triggered the explosion in the car.
That's not good.
The man was able to rescue both his mother and his dog, and they say they do have a place to stay.
You know, here's the thing about being rich. I think I mentioned this one time that I went to a card game at the house of a guy who owns a large chain of auto dealerships. He has a lot of auto dealerships in the Portland and Vancouver area. He owns them, and he's the guy who owns them all. It is a sole proprietorship. And I went to his house to play poker, where he proceeded, by the way, to get blind drunk on 2 bottles of red wine and then to defeat us all by, like, constantly going, like, all in on a 2-7 and then winning. Not because we were letting him win, just because he's one of those guys the universe has just kissed for some reason. You know, you'll be, you know, unbelievably rich, and you will become drunk and still be the best poker player at the table, even when you have a 2-7 offsuit every hand. And it's like, say with our friend Ian, and Ian was just, it's one of those like where they're like, Ian got just drunk enough that he started to mutter like half intelligible threats under his voice as he would sort of like, I'm going to take you up back and kind of little golf club intestines. But it was like, it was in Vancouver, and you think, well, he's really, really rich. Why does he live in Vancouver? But it was some part of Vancouver that I've never seen before. And I don't think I could find my way there again. I think like there's some sort of shield or a dome over it that hides it from human eyes. I mean, it was like, and I think he had access to some other river that I don't get to see, like some secret river that's only for rich people. So when the Willamette, I don't even think it was the Columbia. I think it was like, you know, it was like some sort of Gatsbyan river that I don't get to look at.
There's some kind of, there is some kind of secret magical section of the river where the rich people's houses are, because I took that Lewis and Clark boat ride.
Yes.
Up to the gorge once, and from the river you can see these houses in Vancouver that you're just going, holy crap, who owns that?
Right, and you're like, well, how do I get to those from the road? And, like, you can't, because you have to have, like, a hovercraft or something to get there. But that's what, when you're a guy who drives a Lamborghini. Like, if you want $1 million today, and I said, okay, go pick up a Lamborghini, would you even know where to go? Do you look in the yellow pages under L?
Not really.
Where do you buy a Lamborghini?
I know that there's some luxury car place in, like, this one of the crappier parts of Southeast Portland. And I've driven by, and I've seen it a few times, and I think, wow, they must have, like, excellent security because they feel very, very confident having this thing going, we've got Bentleys and Lamborghinis right inside. So I just think they must have, like, lasers and bombs and trapdoors in that place.
I went to one of those.
Because it's, like, right across the street from a taqueria and a pawn shop.
Why is it going to be a taqueria, Don? Why is it going to be Mr. Obama, huh? I went to one of those lots one time. And you know the weird thing about it is it's like they'll just let anybody take a test drive. You know,
really?
It's like, hey, can I test drive this $9 million car? Here you go. And, like, toss me the keys, basically. I mean, it was, I don't think I had to, I think I had to show them that I had a valid license. And I think that was it. I mean, I, in retrospect, I don't even know that I had to sign anything.
Wow.
I think they just said, like, here you go. You know, I think that the guy literally, like, reached behind the counter, found the keys to, like, what, it's the thing that Laura and I did, like, you know, not that, like, you know, I'm some wizened whatever, but I think that's a thing you do maybe at a certain point in your life. You know, when you're fairly young, maybe you just, like, what would it be like to drive a $100,000 car? I don't know. What are you doing today? Nothing. Well, let's go drive one. And so we just went, I don't know. It was like we found the most expensive car we could find within, like, a 20-mile drive or whatever of our house. But the guy just tossed us the keys and just let it, because they must, in retrospect, they must have, like, low-jack all that stuff. And they figure, like, you know, you can't possibly be dumb enough to try to run with this car. And if you do, that's a place that has the cops on speed dial. And the cops probably put them right at the top of the list. And they will have no trouble finding you if you're in that car.
Patrick and I used to have this habit of we'd go out on the weekends and drive around and look at neighborhoods and look at houses that were for sale and think they were kind of awesome. And we went through this period about a year and a half where somebody had given us on an extended loan a Toyota Highlander that was only a couple of years old. And we were at one of these houses once and we pulled into the driveway and the realtor showed up while we were there. Look, would you like to look around? And we're like, yeah, okay. And then we realized, you know, driving a $30,000 car, they probably think we can afford this house.
Right.
So then we just started going and, like, actually, we were brave enough at that point to just drive up and walk in and walk around some of these places. Because it's like, look, look at us. Look at our car. Why couldn't we afford this?
I got to tell you, I drove, this was a couple years ago, I drove a, it was for a little shoot we were doing for a video for the show a few years ago anyway, and then we had to have a Cadillac for it. And one of the clients we had was I think it's Vic Alfonso Cadillac, who were the fine people. And but anyway, so they lent us a Cadillac for the day, and I had to sign a thing saying, like, don't wreck this or whatever. And I'm like, okay. And they gave me, it was a pricey car. I mean, it was like a $70,000 car, and I was very nervous driving that. But it was really strange, and I was just dressed as I always am. I mean, I had, like, a Motley Crue T-shirt on and, like, you know, a spotty face. But it was amazing, just the way that people talked to me. And, like, I think I actually went through, like, a Burgerville drive-through or something. And it was like they did everything but come out and just, like, and just give me a reach around while I was getting my BlackBerry shake. I mean, it was really, the car had an almost otherworldly power over people.
My friend Bobby, you met Bobby. He has a Porsche Boxster, and he let me drive it one day. We went out on some back roads, and he let me open it up and really drive it, and it's just awesome. And he's actually offered a couple of times, well, you want to borrow the Boxster for a couple of days? You can drive the Boxster, and it's like, I'm just, every time I just go, no, something horrible will happen. No. He's like, anytime you want to borrow it, just go. I'm too scared.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday, right here at Legion of News, Cascadia.fm.
An attorney representing 8 workers from Madonna's charity Raising Malawi says his clients are suing the singer for unfair dismissal and non-payment of benefits. Board members were let go last week and replaced with an interim board that includes Madonna after mismanagement of funds halted plans to construct a girls' school near the African country's capital. Their employment was terminated by the trustees of Raising Malawi Academy for Girls, ostensibly following the change of plan not to build the school as planned, noted the workers' lawyer, who said that Madonna had 14 days to respond to the workers' concerns. My clients are also being forced to sign a discriminatory termination agreement before they are paid their benefits. Eddie Murphy accepted a Career Icon Award. Bill Murray presented the Johnny Carson Award for Comedic Excellence to David Letterman. And Letterman himself punctuated an evening of precision profanity with an F-bomb of his own at the first annual Comedy Awards last night in New York. They also awarded the first ever Golden Microphone for Best Comedy Film to The Other Guys. Movie The Other Guys.
Okay. See that Dane Cook has a Greatest Hits album out now? Just FYI, in case you were wondering what to get Patrick for his birthday.
Is there a, are there subtitles, footnotes on the back telling you whose jokes they actually are?
Zam!
Battlestar Galactica actress Katie Sackhoff will star in the A&E pilot Longmire. Based on the mystery books by Craig Johnson, the series centers on the adventures of a Wyoming lawman named Walt Longmire, played by Robert Taylor. Can't be the same Robert Taylor I'm thinking of. Sackhoff, who also appeared in 24, will play a deputy sheriff on the series. A sexy, sexy deputy sheriff.
Who's the Robert Taylor that you're thinking of?
I'm thinking of Robert Taylor from, like, Strangers on a Train. And
that seems unlikely.
Yeah.
I'm thinking
of someone else. The final Oprah Winfrey Show installment will air on May 25th. Winfrey told The Hollywood Reporter two shows will be coordinated by President Sherry Salata and Winfrey's Harpo Productions team. She said, "I'm allowing for Sherry and the team to plan 2 days of full surprises. I've given up control for the last 2 days.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot to relinquish. I had to pray on that and to get a guarantee from Sherry there would be no strippers or dancing people coming out of shells."
You know, the thing about Oprah, I mean, well, first of all, you know, because we've noted, it's not really the last show. It's just the last show before she goes to her own network.
Yeah.
She is sort of the draw for that own network. Which, you know, and good for her. It's just, it's hard to imagine, and this is, of course, I mean, I'm an idiot like everybody else. I'll watch. Because it's hard to imagine what Oprah could do that would count as a surprise at this point. I mean, there's a time she sent
people to Australia.
Yeah, she flew the entire... We're all flying to Australia with John Travolta, you know, or whatever. And
maybe she's going to take everyone into space.
I mean, would it surprise you, though?
No. No, it wouldn't.
I mean, I was already just thinking about, like, who could she have that would be a surprise? And I thought, well, President Obama. And I thought, too predictable. I mean,
she's going to give everyone their own island.
I can't think of any guest she could have on that would be... There's no one, up to and including the president, that would be a surprise.
She could raise someone from the dead.
Maybe.
That would be
sure.
Surprising. She's got Elizabeth Taylor. She's freshly dead. She probably looks pretty good still.
I mean, it would have to be just someone so staggeringly famous that I can't, I mean, anyway. So I am easily manipulable like everybody else. So I will totally watch the last two Oprah shows just to see sort of, you know, what, and to see if she does the ugly cry, you know, which of course, it's her bread and butter.
Sylvester Stallone is launching a men's clothing line in 2012 based on his two biggest roles, Rocky and Rambo. The business will take his nickname. It's called Sly Inc. And include everything from jeans and shirts to watches and eventually grooming products. "I thought the time is now," Stallone said. "I've lived a life where I know what has worked and what hasn't worked. Clothing is the first step to building a character." Al Roker talked about it on TV. And Tracy Lawrence at Glamour said, "I may have thought that celebrity clothing lines officially jumped the shark when Al Roker landed his own raincoat collection, but it turns out there were far more ridiculous depths for them to sink to." Belinda White of Britain's Telegraph says, "Stallone is a man defined by triumph over adversity, so if Sly says wear it, who are we to argue?"
Here's the thing about that is, despite years and years of disappointments from that guy, I always root for Sylvester Stallone. Every time he does something, I really hope that it's a success, not just commercially, but artistically. Because, you know, he is... technically capable of that.
He kind of won me back with Rocky Balboa.
I loved Rocky Balboa. I liked it a lot.
It was so good.
Yeah. I won't say that I loved it. I liked Rocky Balboa a lot. I liked it a great deal. That was actually, I think that may be the last Stallone film that I saw because I didn't see The Expendables. And that was, you know, The Expendables, I mean, that was the whole, you know, and the roster, you know, the movie that I should have, that was made, you know, that was kind of made for a certain generation of American film goer. I didn't see The Expendables. Rocky Balboa, I actually saw it on Christmas. So it was sort of the best day to see it. And I was kind of in a sentimental mood already. And I think Laura and I were actually out of town. I think we were in San Diego or something. And she was feeling a little sick. She was under the weather. And so it was like, you know, kind of, walking the mean streets of San Diego, but I'm walking the mean streets of La Jolla by myself and whatever. And I saw Rocky Balboa and I thought, you know, well done. And because like you, I liked it a lot. And he seems like a guy who has just made so many colossally bad decisions in his life, but that always, like, you can tell that he wants to make quality work. He just doesn't quite know how to do it. Yeah. Like, he just can't. He doesn't know how to get from here to there. He doesn't want to make schlock. You know, a lot of actors, they're just content. They'll just churn out crap year in and year out. They don't really care. You can sense that in, like, you ever seen him interview where he talks about his dream project? Which is so sad and so sweet and so pathetic, where his dream project, I swear to Christ, is to play Edgar Allan Poe.
Aww.
I see, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you're just like, oh, that's so cute and impossible and never going to happen. It's a cookie. You know, it's like seeing your dog try to open the door or something or play the piano. And you just go, no, have some kibble.
Oh. So, Lindsay Lohan's dropping her last name, according to her mom.
Yeah.
There really doesn't seem to be anything else to the story other than Lindsay Lohan's mom says she just wants to be known as Lindsay.
Okay.
Okay. And Amy Adams has been cast in the iconic role of journalist Lois Lane in the upcoming Superman reboot from Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures. She joins Henry Cavill, Diane Lane, and Kevin Costner on the production, which will be directed by Zack Snyder.
Kevin Costner?
Yeah, I don't know.
As who?
I don't know.
The droner.
Oh my God! I hope he's Perry White.
Kevin Costner, the Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
this isn't like Kevin J. Costner from Tupelo.
I have no idea who he's playing.
All right.
Henry Cavill, by the way, who is playing Superman in the film, is 9 years younger than Amy Adams.
Okay.
So it's a little kind of an older woman, a May December kind of a Lois Lane Superman.
I've come to the conclusion I just don't care about any future Superman projects. And that's not nostalgia talking. It's not like I somehow like, well, Christopher Reeve's as good as it can possibly be done. The conclusion I've come to is that Superman's just not very interesting. Let me revise that. Superman is a fascinating idea. You know, the number of essays that you could write about Superman and what he represents and his sort of metaphorical significance and the psychological implications of Superman. David Mamet has written extensively about Superman as a metaphor for broken homes. And it's the idea of Superman is really, really interesting. Superman's stories are not that interesting because it can't really be all that interesting if nothing can kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, that's just, and if, you know, and if, as we found out in the last Superman film, if even when they put a planet made of Krypton on top of you, if you just try really hard, you can still lift it and throw it into space.
My problem is that, I guess, I admit readily, I am not the demographic that these movies are being aimed at, all the superhero movies. But we've had talks at length about digital effects versus practical effects, particularly when it comes to car chases and things in non-superhero movies. There's a certain amount of thrill that is just lacking when you realize that there is no peril at all involved in the making of what you're watching. And so, and to me also, I'm just really tired of bombastic, big, loud things exploding and bigger and bigger and bigger stuff going boom. And I was at a theater, I think it was when we saw Rango, and I saw the trailer for Thor. And the beginning of it looks really kind of interesting. It's Thor, and he's come to Earth, and they're kind of like, oh, you're adorable and weird. You're strange, thinking you're some kind of a god. And it was actually clever and kind of cute. And then they started showing you all the things blowing up and him flying through space and stuff exploding and stuff hitting and louder, bigger, faster. And I just turned to my husband and I said, I'm bored now.
Right. Yeah, it's like
I'm so tired of it's just, you're not supposed to say I'm tired of superhero movies, but I really am.
You know, well, and it's all, you know, and it's like some Seven Dust song playing on the soundtrack and a thing going like and then a car flying at the camera, which is how they all have to end apparently. Yeah. So, you know what I haven't watched in a long time, a couple of years anyway. I haven't watched Unbreakable in quite some time. Do you suppose that holds up?
I'm sure it does. I know there are a lot of people who don't really care for it very much.
I liked it quite a lot.
The Shyamalan backlash. But I really, really liked Unbreakable a lot.
Well, but he's another guy where it's like, that's why it just, it was so disappointing when all his movies were crap after a certain point. Because I watched Unbreakable and I thought, this is really good. And I I think I almost deliberately didn't watch it again because I liked it so much, and I was like, I'm going to wait a while and go back to it, and then I never had.
No, I've seen it since. It does hold it. It is really good.
It was an interesting way to do what you're talking about without, you know.
On the other hand, The Village was on TV the other day, and I just went, and changed the channel as quickly as I possibly could.
I just watched The Happening again the other day.
Why?
It's so glorious. We've talked about being over the whole, like, it's so bad, it's good thing, but I do make exceptions for that.
I admit, a lot of The Happening I actually liked quite a lot.
Oh, not me.
Like, unironically, there was a lot of it I actually quite liked, but there was so much of it is just a train wreck.
Have you watched The Happening with the Riff Tracks accompaniment?
No. Oh, I bet that's just delicious.
Oh, my God.
I have it.
I'll bring it.
Okay.
I'll bring that.
Yes, please.
Stop. I'll bring that for you tomorrow. Seriously? Oh, my God. Watching The Happening with the Riff Tracks accompaniment, which is the Mystery Science Theater guys, it's the most sublime. It's so wonderful. It is, like, so unbelievably wonderful. It's one of the best they've ever done.
We're
okay. I'm just saying. You. Just, like, FYI. Okay. And there we go. We'll just do that. No, I'll bring that tomorrow. This has been another exciting episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is next hour after a brief musical interlude with music editor Ryan White from The Oregonian, also Aaron Duran. The Week in Geek will also have a Snuff Watch, Clown Watch, and more, including a recap of our morning on KPAM filling in for Mr. Bob Miller, which continues Tuesday and Wednesday. Legion of News comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Hagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you tomorrow at noon. Goodbye now.